Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the Theatrical Mustang Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik, and I just wanted to say thank you for everyone who listened to episode number 1. The feedback has been really positive, and I appreciate it. Some of you asked how I am doing this podcast, and just sort of short and simple, I am working on a MacBook Pro. The first 2 episodes have just been recorded in GarageBand using the built-in microphone the computer has. I've ordered a nicer microphone, and so that should hopefully help the sound quality in future episodes. And then I'm using Podbean.com to host the podcast, and then Podbean talks to iTunes, so you can get it on that app as well. So if you have any more questions about how I'm doing the editing or recording, feel free to let me know in the comments below. So this episode is with Catherine Lynn Morgan, who is directing Chitty Chitty Bang Bang over at Whidbey Children's Theater, and we had a great conversation about art and directing and theater and acting and children's theater and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and it was a really fun episode. I want to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, which is Outcast Productions Theater on the Edge. Their newest production, Nickel and Dimed, based on the New York Times best-selling book, opens this Friday, March 6th, and runs through the 21st. The cast features local actors Eric Anderson, Sean Brennan, Jim Carroll, Judith Dancanis, Patricia Duff, Peggy Gilmer, Doug Kolb, Hannah Mack, Mona Neubauer, and Julia Tewksbury. Learn more and get tickets at www.outcastproductions.net or email ocp@whidbey.com for more information. All right, so that's that. And let's now listen to episode 2 of the Theatrical Mustang Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. So we're here, the second episode of Theatrical Mustang Podcast. My guest today, I'd like to welcome Catherine Lynn Morgan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad you're here. So we just finished the 2 o'clock matinee of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which I give it 5 stars, 10 out of 10. Completely delightful performance. All the kids were... they were just up there acting their heart out, and just congratulations on a job really well done.
Thank you very much.
So what was your journey to directing this production? This is the first production, you're an actor and a writer, but this is the first production you've directed.
Yes. Yeah, I certainly, you know, a traditional middle school start with my acting career where I was a bit part in some weird show called Kabuki Gift that was loosely based on The Tempest, I think, or something, you know, how they do. Anyway, and then high school acting, and then eventually, you know, over years or whatever, I landed in Whidbey Island and landed at Wicca and was in their 2011 June show with you, Metamorphoses,
directed by
Rob Prosh in a pool. And that was really cool. And then from there, I went into volunteering at Wicca. So I was backstage crew, and I was stage manager for Matthew Gregory's Closer show in the Black Box there. And then last year, I started doing set design for WCT, Whidbey Children's Theater, and with Michael's first show when he was first directing, and the first show in the new building at Langley Middle School Auditorium, now Whidbey Children's Theater. That was my first set design, and it was super fun. And I did 101 Dalmatians as well. And then I started set design for Little Mermaid, and then I handed it off to Bonnie Stinson, and she completed that project. So through that process, I was able to get to know everybody at Whidbey Children's Theater really well and start to form relationships and start to kind of recognize kids and see them and wave and say hey, and they're like, oh, you're Michael's wife, yeah, hi, good to see you. And then when they announced their new season and they announced Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I had a little bit like of a heart flutter because Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is one of my like all-time favorite movies, stories, really. And so I kind of like was like, okay, I would love to, you know, direct that, just so you know. And then there's kind of, like, quiet, like, okay, good to know, or whatever. And then, like, kind of, you know, like, quiet for a while, because, you know, everything happens, life happens. And then somewhere around September, Michael said, so are you going to direct Chi Chi Bang Bang? I was like, well, I can direct Chi Chi Bang Bang? And then KDC said, would you direct Chi Chi Bang Bang? And I said, yes, of course I will direct Chi Chi Bang Bang. I would love to. And I think it's kind of funny because being an actor and being a stage crew person and being a set designer, you start to get a really holistic experience of the theater from all these different angles, and you're experiencing from a crew perspective. You start to listen to the show and you see how it develops and you hear different things all the time because you're not able to watch it. And then as an actor, of course, your journey is very specific for each show, and as a set designer you get into the visual aspect of it, so there's all these different angles that you're seeing it from. So we're really, and then as a stage manager, of course, you have a little bit of the power high happening because you're in charge of calling the show.
You are God.
Yeah. You know, the director is like, okay, it's your turn now, you're in charge now. And so you get that kind of like, oh, okay, this is kind of rides on me right now. So really, I feel like I've just been being primed to be in control of all the things for a theater show. I just feel like, you know, like all of my experience has led up to me like being able to say like, yes, I want it this way, which is, it's I'm hooked on it. I will admit, I'm completely hooked on being able to say, yeah, this is our visual, you know, direction, and this is what I want from you as an actor, and this is what I see as your backstory, but if you have something to show me, and anyway, that's been my journey. Here I am, and it's great. It's totally great.
Do you remember how old you were when you first saw the movie?
I was probably 8, I think. Maybe even a little younger, maybe like 6 or 5 or 7 in there. 5 to 8, somewhere in there. But I saw it many, many times.
When I was doing research for this interview, I did not realize the book upon which the movie was based was written by Ian Fleming of James Bond fame.
I know. And I have to admit that A, I've never read the book. And B, I did not know that it was written by Ian Fleming until a couple of months ago, like right before I started directing. Michael's mom was the one that told me, like, yeah, did you know that? I was like, wait, what? Which, it kind of makes sense, though, when you think about it, because of all the little gadgetry and stuff. Like, the Potts is an inventor, and the car is this magical car with, like, wings and boat mechanisms and stuff. So you can kind of see how it, like, translates into 007, like, with all his gadgetry, like, right, fascinations and stuff. But from what I understand, the book and the show are quite different. I just don't know. I honestly have no idea how different they truly are.
And I also saw that Roald Dahl was the one who, one of the two screenwriters that helped adapt it from the book to the movie. And then, so then some people came in and said, hey, let's make this musical for the stage. And then it went through another iteration as a stage show. And I just thought, one of the many things I really enjoyed about the production was the fact that so many of the set pieces were, instead of three-dimensional, they were two-dimensional. And so you had a fantastic purple motorcycle that the actress could carry on and off. And as a talented graphic designer and a visual artist as well, do you think that that was sort of a unique sensibility that you were able to bring in as a director?
I think so to some extent, and mainly because I'm a very visual thinker. I'm a very visual brainstormer. So when I'm, excuse me, when I'm working on a concept or working on developing something, I kind of go internal and look for visuals to come to me and to see what I'm seeing. I know that sounds kind of funny, but it's true. And so when I started reading it, my main challenge was that the show as a movie is so iconic And everybody knows the movie, and everybody knows that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang has wings that come out, and they're red and yellow striped, and she looks a certain way, and Potts has a certain, you know, outfit, and Grandpa has a certain outfit, and the Baron and the Baroness are, have a very certain aesthetic, and they're a very certain relationship and everything, and I really didn't want to compete with that. I wanted it to be something that we could really give to our audiences as this is our show, and that we could really truly own, so we weren't, you know, borrowing this and borrowing that from the movie to try and match it. So I saw, when I really started getting into it, I started to see these really big, bold colors and big line, like strong line and curvature and stuff. And that was like, it was a very, almost formless thing. It was very, much more about color than it was about, shape and stuff. But I, Melissa Koch, who is a very awesome, amazing professional artist on the island and also does work off stage, off island, and she's just been recently getting into set design, we sat down and talked about this whole kind of concept, and she said, oh, yeah, what you're describing sounds a lot like David Hockney, about what, like, what his stage designs look like. And I was like, I have no idea who that is or what you're talking about. And so I looked up David Hockney, and then I started to recognize his paintings, actually, because Andy Granier, who just directed Other Desert Cities, was using David Hockney's paintings as inspiration for his set design for Other Desert Cities. And it just so happens that David Hockney does these set designs that are totally different from his paintings, that are all made out of cardboard. They're all made out of cardboard, and they are all these really, really rich, vibrant colors, and they're kind of magical realism, surreal, a little bit worlds. For those listening and for you to take a look, if you look up his, I hope I don't mispronounce it, but it's a Turandot, T-U-R-N-A-D-O-T. It's an opera that he did, and it was in San Francisco, I think. That was my main inspiration for the set design. Thank you to Melissa Koch. And so she and I developed the backdrop, which is three-dimensional, our first three-dimensional backdrop. So it's painted, and then cardboard, windmill, and castle are created and attached, painted in cardboard and attached to the backdrop. So it gives these really cool shadows and lines and everything. And everything came from the backdrop. The backdrop was the beginning, the colors being blue and red as our primary palettes, and then everything sort of like coming from there, like, okay, well, we're using cardboard, so how do we create these pieces that work, that are still effective, but they also are simple. And I think that it was successful. It's really powerful when I see it, and I'm really kind of amazed that it worked so well, especially because I talked to Kate Kasey, executive director at WCT, and I said, so I want to buy $500 worth of cardboard. And she looked at me like, okay, explain. And I did, and we decided to do it. And Chitty, of course, is made all out of cardboard as well.
It was stunning. And so, I mean, it was just, I think it hopefully also teaches some of your actors how you don't need a big budget to make something. You can be really effective with your imagination and some paint, and then, you know, the dedication of the actors who are bringing it to life. So they say that, I don't know, 85 to 90% of directing is casting. And I think that's not only, I would agree with that, and it's not only the actors who, you have such a fantastic cast that's come together for this, but then also the creative team you bring together. And I was really, really impressed by the quality of the singing. And so the music director was our good friend Melanie Lowy. Can you talk about how she came on board for this project?
Yeah, Melanie, God, I love Melanie. And I've loved getting to know her even better as a friend through this process, because, you know, we've been in shows together and we've been, you know, in the same, you know, peer group, if you call it that or whatever, for a long time. So we've always, you know, enjoyed each other's presence, but now we like actually got to work together, and it was really powerful. And, I just love her. Anyway, she had mentioned to, Michael or somebody at WCT that she was interested in directing, but she didn't. She kind of wanted to do a co-directing thing, and when I came on as director, I really wanted her to be involved, but I I really needed a musical director, and because I have obviously no idea, well, not obviously, but I can sing, but I would have no idea where to start with musical direction. And she's of course in Island Consort, Sheila's group, and I knew that she was a singer and a musician to that extent, and so I asked her to come on as musical director, and she said yes, and I was so grateful. And the other wonderful thing about having her as a musical director is that she's been a director for WCT before, and of course she's an actor as well, and so she has that sensibility, so I can also rely on her to take care of something if I am feeling, you know, overwhelmed with something. For example, being my first directorship, it was not a rare occasion that I was a little overwhelmed by some things. So she choreographed the Roses of Success, and she choreographed the Bambi Samba, and she blocked my children in the sewers scene, and she did a great job, and I knew that I could trust her, and you know, just said, please, will you please do this? And she would say, yes, I will do it. And I knew I could rely on it and that I wouldn't have to worry about anything because she's great.
I would concur. She is very great. We love you, Melody.
We love you.
And also bringing the music of the show to life, you have Eli Moore and Ashley Erickson of Lake playing live music. And that's, I mean, how did that happen?
It all started with the organ. The organ is an electric organ from like the 70s or something that has been sitting in Michael's mom's house for a while. It's his brother, Tommy's. And we were talking about the music, we were talking about finding accompaniment, we were talking about how it would be great to have live accompaniment, and we want this really goofy, kind of funky, not goofy, but funky vibe, and Michael and I looked at each other, it was the first production meeting, and we went, the organ! It was something out of a movie. The organ! And he was like, you know, like, mind meld moment.
And a lot of people might not know that typically for these children's musicals, they, a new trend is that they sort of send you canned music, and more often than not, that's sort of what the kids have to deal with. But what a gift to work with live musicians. That doesn't always happen.
Yeah. The last time I knew that there was a live musician was for 101 Dalmatians. No, I don't even remember, honestly. I think it was 101 Dalmatians or something. But it is. It's usually a CD. And the CDs are so, well, you know, technology is not 100% reliable. So glitches happen and things happen. And the beauty of having a live accompanist is, or two in this case, is that they can adjust for, you know, natural human changes that happen on stage. So if something's going a little too quickly, okay, we'll speed up with the kids. And if not, then, or if something, you know, is being dropped or something like that. But also it just adds to the quality of the show that they are there. It's all, to me, theater is this like alchemical process. It's alchemy. It's so all these variables are coming together and creating this magical piece of art. So having that live accompanist energy is just, it just makes it that much more magical. And I ran into Eli at Kala Kala, and I said to him, Eli, do you know anyone who would be interested in playing music for a children's theater show? And he said, yeah, her name's Ashley. And I said, oh my gosh. And then I saw Ashley at the grand opening of Kala Kala, and we talked about it. And I said, I do have a question for you. You know, I know that you're interested, which is great, because we had messaged each other and talked about it a little bit, but how do you feel about playing the organ? It's an electrical organ. It's got a split keyboard. And she goes, oh yeah, I'm just as comfortable on an organ as I am on a keyboard. And I was just, it was that magical moment. Like, this is meant to be, it's meant to be, I know it. And so, she started coming in and we started working together, and her and Melanie primarily worked together because Melanie's the musical director.
Sure.
And then she said, oh, you know, we were looking at the script and, you know, we thought, you know, we could really do some of the sound effects. And so the sound is a mixture of sound effects from the accompanists and sound effects from the booth that Melanie and Rod both worked on, primarily Melanie getting. But, it makes the show. It makes the show, totally. of course, all the pieces make the show, but I just had this dream of using this organ that glows with all these lights. I don't know if you've noticed, but it has all of these different color lights and it lights up in the dark and it's just this, it matches the show. It is like the epitome of my show, I think, in a visual instrument form.
Sort of the secret ingredient or
yes.
Seasoning that makes...
Yes, the secret mechanism, as the Baron would say.
The secret mechanism still exists. So I don't know, when I was a kid, I definitely did a bunch of children's theater shows.
Mm-hmm.
I was growing up in Madison, Wisconsin, but were you, or did you participate as...
Not much. School, yes. So there's the middle school production that I had that I was sushi girl in. sushi, I love sushi. And,
she still remembers the lines.
Yeah, well, that was basically it. and I was Portia in Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella in eighth grade.
Ooh.
And then I took a break. And then I didn't get back into theater again until 3 years later when I was a junior in high school and I was cast as my first lead part as Mary Hatch in It's a Wonderful Life. By Heather Rager, one of my high school drama teachers, and I remember because my best friend at the time, Sean Fitzpatrick, he was going to audition, and he's like, "You have to come with me because I'm not going to go by myself." I was like, "Okay, fine, I'll go." And then I got cast in the lead part, and I was like, "What is this? This doesn't make any sense." And I remember like the first kind of read through round table thing that we did. We went around, we said our names and who we were, and I was like, "I'm Catherine." No, I said Katie. I went by Katie at that point. "I'm Katie, and I'm Mary Hatch, and I don't belong here," or something really self-deprecating like that, because I couldn't believe it. And so that was sort of the beginning of the end. It was all through school, though. There was no really extracurricular theater stuff for me. It was all, you know, through high school and stuff like that until I graduated, and then I got involved in community theater in Rhode Island. At that time, I had moved to Rhode Island, and Carol Schlink was my new high school director, who welcomed me with open arms, and it was lovely. And then I moved to Seattle when I was 18, and it took a while, but I ended up befriending a bunch of friends from Cornish College of the Arts, who were all in the Original Works program, and which meant that they were directing and writing and acting, all of those pieces together. And so their senior projects, they put on their own shows, and some of my friends needed extra people, and they knew that I had theater experience, and so they asked me, and then I kind of got rehooked again and kind of fell back in love with it because I was kind of in a love-hate relationship with Seattle, and so theater really became an outlet for me to, like, get in touch with myself again, which was really lovely and beautiful and powerful for me, and kind of kept me in my true self, even though there was a lot of stuff going on that kind of threw me for a loop and stuff like that. And so then I, you know, kind of got over being in the city. I was just kind of tired of being there, and so I moved to Whidbey, and I got dropped into this Metamorphoses thing, and I guess that's really the that's where it all kind of solidified as my path.
And I think one of my favorite parts about living on Whidbey Island is the fact that in the summers, now with this new configuration with Whidbey Children's Theater and with Island Shakespeare Festival now in their new location, it's a mini, you know, Oregon Shakespeare Festival almost. You have four theaters within, I would say, half a mile of each other.
Yeah,
and
you're
it's
right.
Just, it's a playground. I think it's a playground for theater artists of all ages. I just think it's so important that Whidbey Children's Theater is here, and you have stepped into the role of program and production manager here, so you get to be here all the time. And can you talk a little bit about just what these programs mean to the kids? Because when I did children's theater, I mean, I was bullied pretty badly all through elementary school, middle school, even a little bit in high school. And theater was always the safe space, always the place where you could never be too loud, you could never be too crazy or weird, or the things that you would get teased about at school were okay and even encouraged in theater. And so, maybe just speak a little bit about how vital these programs are to children.
Yeah, and I haven't, been here long, but it doesn't take long to start recognizing that, especially since I'm a theater person and you're a theater person, so we recognize it immediately. And the theater tribe is this tribe of misfits, I think. At least, I don't know if they're really misfits, but everybody is honored for their quirks. And it's a safe space, it's a home, and we have stuff at WCT. The thing that I love and that I've been really connecting with is that we have stuff for all ages. We go from our creative dramatics, little players classes, which are the youngins, and then we, have a show for the elementary schoolers, and we have a show for the middle schoolers, and we have a show for the teen productions that get the teenagers, that gets, it gets a little bit more into the emotional aspect of theater and exploring character more and a little bit of meatier and edgier stuff, because by that point you want something a little more dramatic, essentially. You're ready to kind of look at, peer over the edge and be like, okay, this is, there's more here and engage with more emotional content. And then we have all ages shows. So everyone sort of has their turn in a way. We really try to balance it out. And we're also working on developing more classes. There's going to be a teen intensive program next year where it's a sort of a year-long program for the teens. And they really work on workshopping different aspects of theater. So improvisational workshops and audition workshops and character building and scene study and things to that effect, monologuing and all that stuff. But then speckled in there, of course, we also have the teen productions. So you can be a part of the teen intensive and do the teen production, or you can just sign up to do the teen production kind of thing. And when I am working in all these different capacities, when I see the creative dramatics little players, or when I first started set designing and people would come up and be like, I love your sets. And then when people found out I was directing Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, these kids were like, you're directing Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And so I started to really see their enthusiasm, and like, they just are ready to pour all of this energy and dedication and emotion and like have a place to put it and have a place to express it, because there's so much going on when you're a kid. There's this whole arc and process, and you're absorbing so much information and you're trying to work it out as you grow up. Like, what does that mean for you, and how does that absorb into your worldview, and how do you absorb that information, and how do you process it, and how do you then use it, or is it not something for you? And so that whole learning process, theater has all of those things. It has, different characters happening. It has group and team building. It has learning how to cover or recover from a mistake on stage. It's live theater. We have to, keep going. The show must go on. So, and you have to work as a team to do that. But then you also have your job to do. So you take care of you. And then you also have this team that you're responsible to. And then you get this awesome reward. And I hate the reward word, but you get this feedback from this audience who comes to see you. They're here for you. They're on your side. And so you really learn this trusting self-respect thing that happens. And for some people, there's just no other place to be. There's, they don't feel good about school because of the standardized school system, and it doesn't work for them. It doesn't match them because they have this creative brain and they're inspirational and they have all this energy and they just want to do something with it, and they have to sit at a desk all day and take notes or do tests or whatever it is. So the theater just really, it has everything. And I still think that when I'm working, when I was designing this set and I'm like using, you know, my geometry skills on a graph paper to figure out like how many pieces of this 4-foot by 40-inch cardboard are going to go into creating this castle that's angled, like, okay, I got to put on my math hat. And they always, you know, there's always that joke of like, well, I never use math in my real life. I'm like, well, I do, theater math. Here it is. It's right here. And yeah, so it's just all the pieces, all the pieces. It's cool.
Well, we want to invite and really encourage our listeners to come see all the pieces. There are three more chances to see Chitty Chitty Bang Bang at Whidbey Children's Theater. Friday, March 6th at 7:30. Saturday, 7 o'clock.
That's okay. We changed the show times so that we could get out, families could get out a little bit earlier. This is the first show where there's 7 o'clock.
That's so smart. And I'm actually glad I sort of made that mistake because now it'll really be in our listeners' souls.
Yeah.
So Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. and then closing night will actually be a matinee performance at 2 o'clock on Sunday the 8th, and that's going to be a family show where all tickets are $8. So really, you have no excuse. Bring yourself. You don't have to have kids or know anyone in the show. It's just really important to show these kids that the community supports them, and so we really encourage you to come. You can get tickets at the door. You can also visit whidbeychildrenstheater.org, and there's a link to the brown paper tickets site there as well. And you can also see what other things are coming up this season. The next production is actually directed by your husband, Michael.
We are co-directing. Yeah.
So why don't you give us a little plug for that one, too.
Okay. All right. The show is a one-act show. It's an absurdist dark comedy. It's recommended for ages 14 and over. It's the teen production this year, the second teen production this year. It's called Chamber Music by a playwright, Arthur Copit, who is a Nobel nominee, and he's won some Tony Awards and some Drama Desk Awards. And this show is about eight women in an insane asylum, and they all... well, I don't want to give too much away, but it is truly absurdist. A little bit of horror mixed in with a lot of humor, but it really makes you think. It gets you into that existential space, so you leave kind of going, okay, all right, and you have that thought. It's that thought provoking, and also like, what did I just watch? That was awesome vibe, and it'll be in the Black Box. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's wonderful that you have two spaces here. And when does that open? That goes for a long weekend at the end of March.
True. Yes. March 26th through March 29th, Thursday through Sunday, one long weekend. Yes.
And then what other productions wrap up the 2015 WCT season this year?
Anne of Green Gables is after Chamber Music.
Fantastic.
That is directed by Melanie Lowy. I know.
I'm so excited. I just got goosebumps.
yeah, and that's a middle school production, and it's got a really all-star cast for WCT. It's great. And so that goes into rehearsal next week or this week or... I don't remember where we are, what day it is. But anyway, very soon, it starts rehearsal. That opens in May. And then in July, Peter Pan goes up, and that's directed by Michael.
I'm buying tickets for all those shows. I'm going to be here. I love the work that the Children's Theater does. So if people want to learn more about you, they can find you on the Twitters, right? What is your handle on Twitters?
My Twitter handle is Lady Catherine Lynn, and Catherine is spelled K-A-T-H-R-Y-N, and Lynn is with a Y and two N's. And you can also find me on a couple different Facebook pages, but you could go to, oh my gosh, which one? Twitter's probably the best. And then there's my graphic design marketing page is called KLMXYZ on Facebook.
That's fantastic. And we'll be able to see you. We're actually doing a show together,
yes,
which I'm very excited about.
For the first time since 2011.
and that's going to be an Outcast. And I'm just going to say the first half of
the
title.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So that's going to be in May, and it's called In the Next Room. And that's definitely a more adult
yes,
themed show. But yes, I'm so excited for you. You're just you're thriving, and we're lucky to have you in our community.
Thank you.
And I cannot wait to see what you do next.
I can't wait for you to be there.
Is there anything else? Anything else? Anything else you want to be asked or talk about?
No, I just want to thank you because this is fun.
Well, we're so glad that we had you on the podcast. I say we, it's me, but yeah. I'm glad you're here. And everyone should come and see the closing weekend of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and support Whidbey Children's Theater in general. And I think that's all we recorded. The end.